Blog Talk Radio.
I was toting my pack along the dusty Winnemucca road, when along came a semi with a high-end canvas covered load. If you're going to Winnemucca, Mac, with me you can ride. And so I climbed into the cab and then I settled down inside. He asked me if I'd seen a road with so much dust and sand, and I said, listen, I've traveled every road in this here land. I've been everywhere, man. I've been everywhere, man. Across the deserts bare, man. I breathe the mountain air, man. I travel, I've had my share, man. I've been everywhere. I've been to Reno, Chicago, Fargo, Minnesota, Buffalo, Toronto, Winslow, Sarasota, Wichita, Tulsa, Ottawa, Oklahoma, Tampa, Panama, Mattawa, La Paloma, Bangor, Baltimore, Salvador, Amarillo, Tocopilla, Barranquilla, and Padilla. I'm a killer. I've been everywhere, man. I've been everywhere, man. Across the desert, bare, man. I breathe the mountain air, man. Travel, I've had my share, man. I've been everywhere. I've been to Boston, Charleston, Dayton, Louisiana, Washington, Houston, Kingston, Texas, County, Monterey, Faraday, Santa Fe, Tallapoosa, Glen Rock, Black Rock.
It's time for the next edition of the Riveting Jumble Justice Radio Show, broadcast worldwide on Blog Talk Radio. Turn up your speakers and listen closely, since you may be asked questions later. Keep your phone handy, since we encourage you to call in your comments to the host and guests on today's show. The listener call-in number is 347-996-5983. Once again, the number is 347-996-5983. You will also find the number on the top of the homepage for the Jumble Justice Radio Show. I'm Audrey, your technical and spiritual advisor for the radio broadcast. And now, without further delay, allow me to introduce your eminently qualified and inspiring host for Jumble Justice, Professor Keith Haley.
Well, thank you so much, Audrey. Every week you get us on without a glitch. Well, I guess we have had a couple of glitches. By the way, where's Mike? We need him tonight. We're going to do some technical stuff where we need him. He went out to get a snack. Oh, to his car. He'll be back. Okay. Don't let that guy leave. Lock him in the control room when he gets back. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Jumble Justice Radio Show and the Blog Talk Radio Network. I'm your host, Keith Haley, and we want to thank Johnny Cash again for taking us on that beautiful trip across the United States where he visits 90 cities and states. And when he sings that song, if you ever heard it, I've never heard it in person, but I would have loved to. He actually sings it with no prompts. He memorizes the lyrics to all that. Take a look at that lyrics sometimes. We used to ask you that during the first year of the show, but it's remarkable that somebody can remember the lyrics to that particular song. Thank you very much, Emily. Good to see you there. Audrey, Mike, we're all set to go with a very interesting show tonight. It's interesting to me. You probably figured out I do a replay once in a while on Danny Chandler and the Meadows Foundation and surveillance. We're not doing that tonight, but we have a condition going on that came to a head last Saturday in Lancaster, Pennsylvania. And Lancaster, Pennsylvania has about 160 surveillance cameras put up all over the city. And the citizens are finally tired of it. It's being run by a private corporation. And this private corporation is working with the city council, getting lots of money from them. And, well, more about that story later. We're going to play some video, but I think the audio is going to be good enough from the video that you'll get something out of it. I'm going to play it in segments and then comment on each of the four segments. So away we go. The purpose of our show is what it always is. We're going to try to discuss news issues, events, and significant developments in the always difficult and sometimes humorous practice of criminal justice. And our show is dedicated to all those people that work in corrections and juvenile justice and police work and the court system who just go beyond the pale in terms of doing the work for us, and they protect us throughout the United States and indeed throughout the world. And it's getting tougher, particularly on the correction side. A lot of places are laying off corrections officers in states and in juvenile justice institutions, and that just means the work gets tougher and tougher. And I can't think of a harder job in criminal justice, at least in terms of patients. and that's being a juvenile corrections officer. Very, very difficult position. So what we try to do is look inside criminal justice practice and take a close-up look at its professionals. And tonight we'll be doing that sort of, but mainly we're going to be taking a look at a citizens' movement that is standing up against a system that is designed, at least it's purported to be that, to reduce crime in the city of Lancaster. If you don't know much about Lancaster, it's not the largest city in the world, but it's part of like Amish country, and poverty rate's about 25%, I'm hearing, as I read a news article about the place, and we'll comment on that when we get to the news tonight. I saw Alan Levy was on Fox News Network again, and he's the CEO of Blog Talk Radio, and this is a guy that took it from one show 3 years ago to thousands of shows and literally hundreds of shows every day, and he's the genius behind the medium, as I'm fond of saying. And what's possible with Blog Talk Radio, one of the most popular websites in the world, it's in the top 100, imagine that, what's possible is that anybody that wants to, any interest group, any organization can have their own show, and they can broadcast live on in streaming audio over the Internet to an unlimited number of listeners. And the progress of that particular practice in the last 10 years is just, it's just incredible. I mean, you would not even be able to do that 5 or 6 years ago. So, and it doesn't cost a thing. So think about it. I talked to somebody this past week that's going to be starting their own show. I may comment more about that here in the future. So anyway, get your own show. If you don't like this one, you can certainly do it. And again, tonight's show is going to be about Lancaster, Pennsylvania, and the Citizens Against Public Surveillance, called CAPS. Nice little acronym, isn't it? Citizens Against Public Surveillance, and they're moving. They're getting some attention all across the United States, and I don't think it's going to be a trend because most people don't get into it like the CAPS group has in Lancaster. But it's something that's bothering people now. Finally, they're waking up to the idea that they can be monitored at all times on video surveillance. And I know what the line is. If you're not doing anything wrong out in public, what makes the difference? Well, it does make a difference. And if you want to read some intricate little assessments of that, take a look at the British online journal called Surveillance and Society. Wouldn't you know that would be a British journal, right? Britain has the most surveillance cameras per capita of any place in the world. But what you're doing tonight, you can listen on your computer. Some of you are. You can actually call in on the cell phone and listen that way if you'd like to do it. Occasionally somebody has done that. And if we take calls tonight, you can hold about 5 calls at a time. We can't. And we can all talk to each other at one time. And people are still reacting to Audrey's blonde joke last week. I think it was just a winner. Remember the blondes, the three different groups of women went on the tour on the bus, and the blondes were riding on the top floor of this double-decker. But Audrey, that was a great one. But you have another one tonight. And I should point out that Audrey England, she is a blonde, and she's been a collector of blonde jokes since she was a child. She does not take offense at blonde jokes. And Audrey, one of these days, you and I have talked about it, I think you need to put your favorite jokes together, and let's put it in an audio book and put it on Amazon.com. What do you think? Would it work? I think it would. We've got the work done. All we have to do is sort of assemble it. We'll look to Mike to do that because, you know, you and I probably couldn't do that to start with. So, Audrey has a blonde joke tonight, and Audrey, what's this one? You're going to pay tribute to blondes in terms of inventions that they've come up with. Very good. So we're going to pay tribute to blonde ingenuity tonight. Go ahead, Audrey.
Professor Haley, we have a novel blonde joke for tonight's show. We are going to explore the creative and inventive side of blondes. I hope our listeners enjoy it. Here's a list of novel inventions created by blondes. 1. The waterproof towel. 2. Glow-in-the-dark sunglasses. 3. Solar-powered flashlights. 4. Submarine screen doors. 5. A book on how to read. 6. Inflatable dartboards. 7. A dictionary index. 8. Powdered water. 9. Pedal-powered wheelchairs. 10. Waterproof tea bags. 11. Watermelon seed sorter. 12. Zero proof alcohol. 13. Reusable ice cubes. 14. See-through bathroom tissue. 15. Skinless bananas. 16. Do-it-yourself road map. 17. Helicopter ejector seat.
Oh, I like that. If we get you to do the book, Audrey, that one will certainly be in there. That's a good one. A list of blonde inventions. Not sure I understood, the ejector seat in the helicopter. Ooh, that hurts. Okay, ladies and gentlemen, we also have a green tip for tonight, and I'm going to be quick about those. Some of you have been boiling water on top of stoves, whether it be electric or gas range, for a long time. And confess now, don't you often boil too much water? In other words, you take too much energy, whether it be the fuel or it be electric range or whatever. What you should be doing now is very carefully sorting out exactly the amount of water you need for a cup of tea or whatever that happens to be. Put that in the tea kettle, then do the boiling, and you're not wasting water and you're not wasting energy. I thought that was a great idea. And you need to do something about the opening and closing of that refrigerator door. That door gets open and closed 50, 60 times a day, and you need to get some type of program together with your children and your family where you're going to be reducing the number of times that you open and close that door, because every time you open it, it makes the thing run. So maybe you could have sort of like group gatherings in front of the refrigerator door. That would help. Or only have certain times where the door is open, you could put a lock on it and some type of timer. You could actually do that. So that's our green tip for tonight, and certainly that will contribute to reducing the carbon footprint on planet Earth. So part of that tip was from 1001 Little Ways to Save the Planet by Esme Floyd, and part of it was my idea. I'm trying to think green constantly now, and I think we can deal with that. Let's take a look at some CJ News. Some interesting things out here. By the way, folks, any police officers listening tonight, how in the world would you deal with this issue? Here's a woman in Chicago. Have you heard about her? It's a fairly recent story. She's 86 years old, and she's charged with shoplifting wrinkle cream and other items from a Chicago grocery store. She's been arrested 61 times since 1956. She's almost as bad as that bank robber that the FBI hasn't caught, who's actually, the guy's robbed 90 banks. But Ella Orca is her name. She was arrested this past Sunday, or a couple Sunday afternoons ago, on the north side after she allegedly stuffed $252 worth of groceries into her pants, including cosmetics, salmon, batteries, and instant coffee. Wow. She'll be charged with felony shoplifting. And they said that she goes by as many as 20 different aliases. Very clever. I wonder how many you really need, how many aliases. Well, she goes by 20. Court records indicate that she's now been arrested 61 times, and she has 13 convictions for shoplifting. I assume that she's been convicted of perhaps some other things, too. I would think she'd be getting off on those charges. Pretty easy to prove. We caught you with the stuff, and it came from our store. She was arrested her first time in 1956 in Chicago for petit larceny, and then again in 1958 for grand larceny. She's on a $10,000 bail, and it wasn't immediately clear who her lawyer is going to be. I assume she's going to get an assigned counsel. So you show up as the assigned counsel for this woman. I mean, what do you tell her? Plead for mercy, or break that bad habit you got? But doesn't seem like she's going to be changing her behavior, at least for a while. And apparently she's amble enough that she can get around and do a pretty good job. So that's amazing at somebody that age. I can remember one 72 years old that was a shoplifter, and Kroger's insisted that she be prosecuted. And so cops don't have any choice in something like that. Here's a story I was very much interested in, since I've done some writing about gun shows and big gun shows in Texas. It says the gun show report is critical of sales. And what this professor did, Professor Wintermute from the Violence Prevention Research Program at UC Davis in California, School of Medicine, why in the world did schools of medicine, you remember when that happened about 20 years ago, got involved in this business of violence and violence prevention? They were trying to say that violence, people was a disease, a contagion that, just went through the community like we're talking about swine flu or something. But anyway, he went to 78 gun shows, documenting the private sale of guns at gun shows. And if you've ever been to a gun show, you probably realize you'll see people walking around in a gun show with a rifle strapped to their shoulder or something like that, and they'll have a little price tag on it. In other words, they're there to sell. Some will get their own table. Of course, at the gun show also will be many sports companies and firearm stores that sell guns and ammunition and that type of thing. But when you buy from them, you have to go through an instant record check in the state of Ohio that will tell you whether or not this person is a criminal, whether or not they should be getting a gun. Of course, if you buy it to the guy or woman walking down the aisle, it's often an exchange of 5 minutes, 10 minutes, a little chat, and goodbye. And I have heard people say that I didn't like the guy that wanted the gun, so I didn't sell it to him. But, it's away you go. So he's saying that, of course, that these private sales of guns at a gun show are going into the hands of criminals, and then criminals are going out and victimizing other people. He said he saw a man was given cash to fill out forms and undergo a background check by the dealer. An AK-47 assault rifle was then handed over to the man who actually initiated the buy. He said it's an easy way for criminals to obtain guns. But guess what? When he came out with his final report about this, he's being criticized by another professor who said there's not one thing in his report that says or proves that these guns ever go to criminals. And I'm thinking, if I'm a criminal and I'm needing a gun, I don't know if I'm going to go to the gun show where there's police protection and probably undercover police protection, at least if it's a big gun show. But Professor Bengtson, UC Davis researcher, he says this none of this evidence was presented. So it's just speculation that these guns that are going through private sales, this is called the gun show loophole in terms of people not having to go through that background check. He said there was no evidence in this report that these guns were going to criminals. Certainly some have, but on the other hand, how long would it take you to buy an illegal gun on the streets of Detroit? Chicago, name another city, it'd probably be about the same way. Well, let's stay in California a moment and keep looking at these academics. An Irvine professor, he says that California voted Monday to release 27 inmates back into the community. They're getting an early release in order to save money, and I forget how many millions of dollars California says they're going to save with this. But what he's showing, he's analyzed monthly crime stats in correlation with parole releases, very clever, in specific neighborhoods. And a HIP survey, which studied neighborhoods in Sacramento, because he said it's a good sample of economic and ethnic demographics, showed that if the parolees have violent backgrounds, murder rates increase. The same is true of reports of aggravated assault, robbery, and burglary, according to HIP. You know, the Part 1 crime, what we call the index crimes, murder, robbery, rape, and aggravated assault, those are the violent crimes, and burglary, larceny, motor vehicle theft, and arson. Arson's very complicated. It could be lots of motives for that, but those are considered the property crimes. And he's saying that these crimes, in fact, go up. I can't believe it. Some would say that letting criminals out of prison who've probably been to prison before, recidivism rates are anywhere from 55 to 70%, that they would go out and commit more crimes. And the prediction is that if we let these people out early in California, whoop, you've got a flood of people on the streets, and that's seriously going to affect the crime rate in some of these California studies. Now, here's another article out of the Los Angeles Times, nice newspaper. It says stacks and stacks of ammo that used to pile up in gun shops across America, they've dwindled. Some of these consumers are paying, three and four and five and six times the price of what they would normally pay for ammunition. And part of that reason is not just people worrying about ammo shortages, maybe the government. We always do that when a new president comes in, they want people wonder, but this president particularly, they're thinking, what's he going to do about guns? He says he's a Second Amendment supporter, so we'll see. But and we have to take him at his word. What else could we do? But anyway, ammunition is going up, and one of my friends in Dallas said something that usually would go for like $22 or $23 a box of ammunition. He saw go for $180 at a gun show, a big gun show in Dallas. And he's a firearms authority. But anyway, that's interesting. And he says part of the reason for this is because so the military is wanting so much of this small arms ammunition. And they're buying lots of it. And it says here the U.S. military demand for small arms ammunition has almost quadrupled this decade, increasing from 462 million to 1.6 billion rounds. Isn't that incredible? I guess when you got your feet planted in two wars, you need ammunition. So that's actually incredible that that's going on. One more California story, I promise. In Escondido, California, people are protesting of sort, but they're trying to show their support for carrying a firearm. In fact, one guy, California, is not as quite as fair and as open about getting a concealed carry license as other states. He said in one county he got the thing right away. Another county didn't get it, and his only arrest for anything was for a traffic ticket, and he wasn't able to get it. He says only the rich people get it. But what this group is doing is a bunch of Navy veterans and folks like that. He says they're doing the open carry thing. In other words, you can carry an open firearm in California, like in a holster, if it's not loaded. So I guess it's sort of like the Bonnie Fife approach to protecting yourself. They're meeting for coffee and having discussions, and they're carrying their firearm in a holster that is totally visible to other people and, of course, to police officers. And I think maybe carrying the ammunition in your pocket is probably legal. He said this guy's Hidalgo says his application for a CCW license was denied. So anyway, that's interesting. I was referring to someone today who went to get their CCW license renewed, and the person that does the license renewal and the original applications also does the processing, very nice deputy sheriff. She was saying also that she does sex offenders. And he was hoping that let's don't get our records confused. That could get very complicated. Here's an interesting one that comes along, and I'm a big fan of corrections officers at either adult or juvenile institutions. And Great Britain and their prison league over there has finally said that it's time for our prison officers to have college degrees. In other words, saying these people they need more than just 8 weeks of training. They need a formal college degree. And some of our states around the nation actually ask for college. I don't think anyone asks for a four-year degree right off. They'll recommend 2 years of college or something like that. An additional college will assist you in the selection process. But I found that interesting that I don't know of another place in the world, and I'm a little ignorant about that, where they're going to ask corrections officers to actually have a bachelor's degree. I don't know if our federal government has moved toward that or not, but I'm not exactly sure. It's a long case to discuss, but I guess you've probably heard about that case in California where that perpetrator kidnapped the young girl at 11 years old, kept her captive, fathered two children from her, and then finally the police show up. The parole officer's been checking her house like three times, and deputy sheriffs and police never looked in the backyard where this guy kept this young woman and these other kids. In the backyard in tents, in a very primitive condition. Somebody said, you know, one of the things that's bad about that, sex offenders can't, he's a convicted sex offender that was let out on parole. Sex offenders can't live anywhere. They have these barriers they can't live within, so, you know, close to a school or a nursery or any playgrounds or something like that. So they get sent out to the outskirts, and that might have contributed a little bit to the ignorance of the state officials about not knowing what this guy was doing. I guess I heard the mother quoted on television early today where she said that the girl recognized her. She's 28 now, I believe. She recognized her parents and remembers something about it. And it's, you know, we hope for a recovery in that situation. But what an odd and terrible thing to actually happen to someone. Well, I think let's Oh, I just want you to see this if you haven't. The New York Times had a long article about it this week. Have you seen the Welsh public safety announcement against text messaging drivers? If you haven't seen that, go to YouTube. You can actually get the article a number of places, but go to YouTube and type in like Welsh or Wales text messaging driver video or something like that, and you'll get it. And one of the things it's criticized for is it goes too far in terms of showing the raw injuries and death in this particular video. And the very sad part of that is where a little girl sitting in a back seat, she says, "Mommy, Daddy, wake up, wake up." And then when the cop comes to talk, she says, "I want my mommy and daddy to wake up." But the girl ends up killing, I think, like two or three people in this thing. But, boy, it is vivid. And somebody's saying when they're doing this, these things are great. You can show them in driver's training and that sort of thing. But it really, the lasting effect is not long. You know, 3 weeks, a month, 3 months, a year after it's over, people forget that. He says you need some type of deterrence. And I guess now we're talking about some type of penalty. So Utah got busy on that here a couple weeks ago and passed a law against it. I think it was 2 weeks ago. And I think you're going to see that happen more places. We've all seen them driving across the street, crossing the center line and that type of thing, doing text messages. Well, let me talk to you a little bit about this Citizens Against Public Surveillance. They had a protest in Farnham Park this past Saturday, August 29th, from 1 to 4 p.m. And you can find out a lot about them by going to stopthecameras.com, stopthecameras.com. And that web address is clearly their objective. And what's happened is that over a number of years, Lancaster has teamed up with a private surveillance company. And what this company has done, Bosch, a supplier of surveillance cameras, and then another company, they've put cameras out on the street all over the place. And what happens in the first segment of this video that runs almost 10 minutes is that they go out and interview people on the street. And Renee Baumgartner is the founder of the Citizens Against Public Surveillance. And almost everybody they talk to, they don't like this. They talk to young people on the street, and they're not satisfied with it. They're worried about what's going to happen. They'll be falsely recognized and accused of a crime. Citizens are walking around with protesting signs with a big arrow that says "Look up and see you're being watched." And many of these are so high, and they're the highest sophistication. They can pan and tilt, and zoom, and all kinds of things, and they're hard to see. What the public can see is essentially nothing. They're not allowed to even visit this place and find out anything about it anymore. In fact, the company actually stopped having tours of its facility. So it's an interesting thing. I think you're probably going to see more of this around the country. I don't think it's going to be widespread protest, but they've got the citizens of Lancaster, Pennsylvania, organized against that. So bear with us just a moment, and we'll get this little thing started, and I hope you will be able to hear this audio. It's very interesting.
Lancaster's doing. This is why I'm concerned.
This video is an overview of the story of great tactical importance. Please watch it and support our efforts at stopthecameras.com.
There's one here, there's one on that building, one over there. There's four of them.
That is crazy.
120 right now. They're going to 150. Five.
Got a camera 18 stories up. Oh, probably covers about 4 or 5 blocks right there.
That one's the one at Turkey Hill, and this is the one in front of my house.
That's incredible. Oh, my God, look at that. Okay, so that's right there on the 5 points. Covers all 5 streets.
And over to that corner of that building, which is the other corner.
It's moving.
Yeah, it's watching.
It's an anonymous eye in the sky where there's absolutely no humanity to it. It's a simple camera observing. If you're watching republicmedia.tv, I'm a hero. Stick with us.
Having the claim of having the most surveillance cameras
for per capita of any city in the country, that it's located right there in Pennsylvania, and of all places, right in the middle of very conservative Lancaster County. There's some oddities associated with that, if anybody thinks about that.
We are in the heart of Lancaster, Pennsylvania, in the beautiful historic square here, in front of a monument, which ironically is set up in honor of servicemen and women that have served our country, indeed, in some cases, given their lives to protect and defend the Constitution of the United States and our individual freedoms and liberties. And right directly over my shoulder, we see the all-seeing eye of the community surveillance system.
I mean, eventually there's going to be camera everywhere, you know. They do even call the program. I mean, all three. Is that a good argument for us to make that leap?
I don't mind if Big Brother is the authorities keeping us safe, but that ought to be part of public domain or public news, if you will. I don't know who Big Brother is. I don't know much of it. One thing.
Is it for driving now?
No.
It's surveillance.
Surveillance.
Do you know who's watching it on that camera right
now? No, I have no idea.
No idea.
Is that what you came up with the cameras today?
Yeah.
I wouldn't mind it if it was regulated by actual officials instead of some random corporation that is hired by, you know, the city of Lancaster or by whoever they are hired by.
And according to the UK, they have said that the cameras, 4.2 million of them, only solve for this after the fact, after you've been shot, after you've been raped or whatever, solves about 60% of the time.
I feel like somebody's watching me, you know, because I got the camera right there.
I mean, this is like the first step, the installing of the cameras, and there are city councilmen on record saying that they already want more than the 165 that are part of this initial implementation.
You're not doing anything wrong,
yeah,
you still shouldn't have to be watched, right?
I mean, you're still being watched, you're not doing
anything. It's unfair for those that are not doing nothing.
They
didn't ask us. It's not our fault that people out here doing what they're doing.
No, it makes it worse. It makes it worse.
You can't stop crimes from happening, no matter what you set up, cameras or whatever.
No, I thought that was
interesting. You say it makes it worse?
It made it worse, yes. The one body went up more and all that
stuff. I don't know. I can't fight with my wife from the camera and they think another thing and they come arrest me because they got the camera there. And they don't know why I'm talking with her. Maybe we are joking and moving the hands. So they think that's a fight and they come.
What if I told you that was being run by a private, not-for-profit organization who will not make public how many employees are watching or what their standards are for hiring the people that are monitoring the cameras, and it is not under any sort of elected official governmental oversight at all.
Or could they come from our tax dollars?
I tell you, I'm upset.
Really? Now, why would that tell you?
That sounds like something that the government should do.
So when I was working, my brother-in-law asked me for money. He gave me, you got $2 there? I gave him the $2, and the police was thinking I was selling drugs.
What do you think
would happen? They got arrested. So I was in the police station for 8 hours because they was looking the camera, what's going on.
Let's say there's no cameras. What do you think would help?
The cops stop worrying about people walking the street, smoking a cigarette and cursing, and worry about going to the movies at a suit line of ATV.
No, I think that, you know, cops coming to me, oh, you look like somebody, or we've seen you on a camera, what are you doing in this neighborhood? Well, I live here. I pay my rent here. Why are you questioning me? What about the people that's out doing other stuff? You know what I mean? Why are you focusing on people that's hard working, paying their taxes and staying out of trouble?
$3 million.
Yeah, go fix buildings. Go fix somebody's house. Go do something for the community. Put these bullshit cameras up. Yeah, I just don't understand. And being picked and judged and everything like that is just not right.
Do you know?
Like, they trying to just keep us in one little area and just try to keep us struggling and, you know what I mean? It's just not right.
Shut up, sit down, pay taxes, don't ask questions.
Exactly.
We agree with you. Thumbs up.
We got to take them down. One guy yelled. Another guy quoted Ben Franklin.
There you go.
Yeah. And I said, look at the back of my shirt.
I don't like the fact of anybody that can just watch me. I thought it was for police use only. But I guess that would make sense. That it's not. I mean, there's been so many times there's a car break-ins and police say they can't do nothing about it. Just said that you can't see anything or the camera doesn't reach that way. But if it's not just for their use only, I don't understand what the sense of having them then.
I don't know if I even supposed to go with this, though.
Well, no, I don't.
Yeah!
Seems like a lot of people don't know these cameras are even here.
Yeah.
Yeah, a lot of people just don't seem to know.
Does it concern you that you don't know?
Yeah, I don't like that. I don't like that at all. No. With the way everybody is nowadays, no, that's pretty down. Like the fact of somebody being able to watch me and me not knowing what's going through their mind with that situation. Part of the reason why I put my daughter in modeling, I don't know who's going to be looking at her or watching her.
Right, but
yeah.
Who decides
that you're not doing it? Do you know who's monitoring
the camera? I don't know.
Ma'am, the point is that the person monitoring with that...
With the camera.
Well, that's to protect your safety. That's so the people that are viewing that can send the police to help you if something's wrong. Now, do you know who watches the camera, though?
Huh?
It's not the police department. Private citizens. Workers decide they don't like how you look.
That's
how you look.
Nothing but a who is monitoring these cameras?
Exactly.
Chandler here for RepublicMedia.tv here at the Lancaster Community Safety Coalition offices off Conestoga in downtown Lancaster, Pennsylvania. Here,
the Lancaster Community Safety Coalition is a private organization. Since 2005, it has deployed high-powered surveillance cameras throughout the city of Lancaster, Pennsylvania, keeping the people who live there and the city visitors under constant general surveillance.
So is somebody actually controlling that, or are we...
No,
just like... So somebody's hitting it with a little joystick and making it go as we're watching now.
Yeah, in the past, we've allowed folks to come in and visit us. Is there a policy or procedure that they have to follow in order to come in here?
Call the phone number and call Joel with the staff.
Right. The public cannot attend board meetings. The public has no access to the video surveillance records. The public cannot view the video data that is collected. The public is not privy to ongoing operation details. The identity of the camera monitors remains a secret as the LCSC refuses to make their names public. And now, even the public visits have been shut down. Citizens Against Public Surveillance, known as CAPS, has received ongoing complaints from Lancaster citizens who have been attempting take LCFC upon their promise of transparency, but no avail. Follow-up emails by RepublicMedia.tv to Executive Director Joe Morales have also gone unanswered since our visit in late.
Okay, what we're going to do now, I think, is roll right on to the second segment. Here you're going to be able to listen to the mayor, a pastor, who's there in town, and some other folks concerning the secrecy of this. One of the things that's going on is people say, well, look, you can walk down the street and look into somebody's house, so what's wrong if a camera can do that? So one of the precautions they take with this type of technology is to include what they call masking software. In other words, as soon as it detects a window that would have a view inside a house, then it puts up masking software. And the people are very skeptical about that. For one reason, they put up the new cameras before the masking software is even available. So here's another segment.
Live. Phone calls from Mr. Morales are not returned. It seems an attempt to visit the facility in person by concerned Lancaster citizens have been rejected recently. An employee by the name of Jessica, who answered the phone, did confirm that, quote, we have suspended all public tours until such time as we can review our tour policies. There are no laws, it seems, or ordinances to regulate use of this powerful private surveillance system. So, the LCSC apparently making up the rules as they go along, without concern for legal implications. And yet, Lancaster City officials claim that they have no say in this ongoing process.
Well, as a city council member, what's the silence on the cameras? I mean, the city council hasn't taken any kind of a stand on it.
The city council hasn't taken any stand on it because the city council has had nothing to do with it.
And we need to call the mayor 10,000 times because the elected officials of the city ought to be responsible for whether at watching cameras. They cannot wash their hands like pilots and say there's nothing they can do about it.
You know, as I said to you before, I wasn't going to, I don't have a statement. We get to that point.
You're telling me, you're saying that the city council has no responsibility as to whether or not all of the citizens in their city are being surveyed 24 hours a day.
They need to know, especially if they use city money and county money to fund these cameras, that none of them should have a job, but they're funding the cameras, and they don't know what's going on.
But the city has provided $300,000 total for the purchase of cameras. That I would consider an official stance.
Something that came into our public space and was voted on with funding, whether or not they wanted to just a certain amount of funds to this certain security area.
Members of CAPS and other opponents to the cameras insist that their voices have been ignored for years.
Yeah, see that, man? Yeah, get him out of here.
What do you guys think of that?
I think it's insane.
I really want to know why one is in place right in front of the church door. I think that we ought to be able to have the right to privacy when we come to worship. And sitting right at our front door, I don't know the reason for it. We never asked for a camera. We never went down to see about the cameras coming into our community, and it shouldn't be there.
But you're the mayor. Single-handedly, you would have a council.
No way, because I don't have the power.
The mayor needs to be called. The city council people need to be called. And if they can hear from you, something will be done. But if they don't hear from you, are they going to keep lying and saying nobody's against the cabinet?
People say to me, why aren't they on my block? I want them on my block. I get more demands like that. They vote by apathy by not being there. But having said that, most of the people in the meetings who were referring to were favorable.
Yeah, we actually got the number one question. I said this, you can talk to people who were there or talk to people in the community. That the question we got most often from those few dozen that were there was, how do we go about getting a camera on our block?
There's not been
then how do you explain 360 people almost I've talked to that don't want cameras in a particular neighborhood?
I explain it by 15,000 people probably that I have talked to that want
him. Yeah, I've been hearing that since I started speaking out against it. That nobody else is against cameras, and every time I turn around, there's somebody else who says they're against cameras.
So I'm a little caught off guard when people say, you know, I woke up one day and there were 70 or 80 cameras in my community. Since 2001, when this really got off the ground, there have been numerous newspaper articles. There was a front page story about the expansion and the December 21st Sunday news that went out to the county and included a mass.
You said 15,000 postcards, though.
Yeah.
15,000 doesn't
yes.
come close to even half of the population of Lancaster.
Look, I'm just saying a number.
Yeah.
We sent out 15,000 postcards telling people that there are cameras scheduled to be installed in your neighborhood, and we'd like your input, your questions, your commentary. And this was all subsequent to the hearings in which people said, we want this for our community, and we want it to be run by a nonprofit.
I think what happened, they were concentrating on raising funding and expanding the camera system, and some of these other important considerations might not have dawned on some people. They might have had other priorities.
How did still the LA Times wrote a story about the absurdity of such a surveillance system in a small city like Lancaster? that time, the opponents have mobilized.
Do you know what people know about these cameras? Or?
No.
Truly open, independent media is thus beyond the veil of space to find significantly deep problems, including possibilities, conflicts of interest, and other dubious
fields. The bank money spot is making a lot of money off this.
The global choice for innovative technology.
I mean, they were giving the cameras free for the long time.
Sure. This is the experiment town of the nation.
For which
and they're advertising on their website.
For whichever reason was, we're being able to have a successful program because we got cameras for free.
Yeah, I got a lot of cameras out there. A lot of fire rockets down there.
Where did you go to? Who gave you permission? How did that work?
You know, you asked whose permission was sought and received in order for this to happen. Obviously, the utility companies that own these poles and approve any attachments, whether it be for cable television, other telephone wiring, et cetera. So it would have been PPL that approved and permitted and allowed for the installation of cameras, and they would have had not just internal approval for that, but technical and engineering approvals to make this all happen. And the infrastructure for the fiber optic would have been approved by the city, mayor's office, then Mayor Smith Gall and others. So, yeah, there would have been an approval process that involved several entities for this all to happen.
The mounting pressure sparked by the independent investigations of Republic Media and the local indie news blogs, as well as concerned citizens who have stepped up and issued right-to-know requests on City Hall, has exposed this private surveillance organization for what it is: sloppy, undemocratic, highly secretive, and incompetent at protecting citizens from its own employees. Lancaster newspapers, in an apparent attempt to protect their investment into LCSC in the form of a $2 million interest-free loan, recently ran a massive series on various aspects of the organization and the surveillance system that is in place. In the process, they ran some background checks on LCSC employees and found that one employee of the LCSC has allegedly been hauled into court for harassment charges. Janelle R. Wright also has a history of being charged with various other offenses, from impersonating a public servant to being cited for unauthorized use of emergency lights on her vehicle. Executive Director Joe Morales had this to say after he fired Ms. Wright. Upon learning about her history, quote, "Even though no one was harmed and no confidential information was compromised, this incident reflects poorly on the organization and the dedicated employees whose records of professionalism have earned the public's trust," end quote. It did not, however, explain how Wright's background had not come to light during the coalition's pre-employment check.
I mean, obviously, all of our staff have to go through criminal background checks, they go through drug testing, they go through training that prepares them for and sort of clears them to do the kind of work that we're doing here. So obviously we're trying to balance the confidentiality and privacy issues with people who have concerns about civil liberties. So
I promise the coalition would take, quote, "immediate action to ensure that this will never happen again," end quote. Mr. Morales should be reminded that the public was promised that this couldn't have happened in the first place. Mr. Morales would also be well advised to save such promises made under pressure. The public is becoming increasingly aware that this is all these words amount to. Perhaps someone should also ask Mr. Morales and his board about the often made promise that cameras cannot view private residences close up due to the use of masking software.
somebody could easily, if the Zoom was powerful enough on these cameras, be able to look in there. That was not that much private. It wasn't mapped out.
No, actually,
explain that to us.
Absolutely, yeah. And if you, well, you're welcome to come back in and take another look. But if any of these cameras are close enough to a home or private residence or business where they would zoom in, you'll see that these black boxes pop up over windows and other exposed areas. And I can show it to you if you want to go back in and take a look. But
that's why I was looking at you when you were talking. I was watching. I didn't see a single black box.
I'm going to roll right into this next segment where it talks about this masking. I think you'll be interested in that. It's working.
We were told by Mr. Morales during our visit that sometimes cameras go into service without the masking software being set up and calibrated because the LCSC is putting new cameras up every day.
In order for this to be done and done well, it requires not just transparency, but a balance of transparency and accountability. And if it hasn't happened to the degree we'd like in the past, I want the community, I want journalists, I want citizens to continue to hold us accountable so that if this is going to exist, that the policies, the procedures are constantly being reevaluated to make sure we're reaching the highest standard possible.
Well, we tried to follow up on this issue with the LCFC to learn more about how regularly cameras are brought online without the masking feature in place, but our efforts to get more information on this subject have gone unanswered.
They are masked, I'm telling you.
Yeah.
I'm telling you.
They're masked.
They are, but once the cameras go up.
No, they're masked. They're not masked, man. And if that doesn't happen, I think the citizens have every right to say, no, we're not sure this is for us.
I just had the interview with Joe. I was yesterday. And he said, once the cameras go up and are actually up there, they're not open, they're not calibrated yet. There's a few days before they bring a guy in to make sure that they have the master feature in place. And I don't know whether it was a line that he was feeding me that it's one day or two days, but my estimation is there should have been no days that a camera is up there able to view people's personal property and zooming in on house windows. Unmasked and unblocked. That should have never gone online.
If you're in a camera and the side of a home is 150 yards away, no person can see that with the naked eye what's going on in that house. But if you zoom in closer, or if we're to have a camera mounted within 100 feet of a house, you'll immediately see those black boxes pop up on windows and other areas, that, which is ironic because a person on the street can see into people's open windows. And that's not illegal, whereas we take the added precaution of masking because we know that's a concern that people have.
But it would be considered illegal if that person stood outside of their house 24/7 and monitored what was going on. Windows, there's a lot of concern. There's a talk right there.
Masking software, it is impossible. It is impossible for the operator to override it.
Well, turn the camera. Let me hold the camera and you can make this safe.
Running over to a building and you stop to keep up with you guys And all I have to do is watch my street for my security, and this guy has to watch his street for his
security. I cannot pass citizens would think that they're responsible.
It seems there is a lot of pressure mounting on the LCSC these days, and rightfully so. And still, they make bad move after bad move in an ongoing attempt to screen themselves in the face of continued public criticism. Case in point, when we showed up in Rachel and I, we were told that we were not allowed to film at all control for security. That the LCSC takes very seriously the privacy concerns of those who may be captured on their system, but in yet another sign of a desperate attempt to justify their program, they have allowed a local TV station to film in their control room, as well as recently releasing 4 surveillance videos through their partner, Lancaster Newspapers, for publishing on their website. We have to wonder how the many people captured in this publicly aired footage would feel about the LCSC's flip-flopping on their concerns over the public release of their footage.
So, it says there that the black cameras have to be in by March 2000. This is where we were on the corner where the 4 cameras were.
Okay.
At the top of the 2 buildings and the pictures we took of you.
The proliferation of cameras in Lancaster was done in such a stealthy manner that potential harm to the civil liberties of citizens and visitors to Lancaster, not to mention many other legitimate concerns, clearly took a back seat to the installation and fundraising for this program.
I think what happened, they were concentrating on raising funding and expanding the camera system, and some of these other important considerations might not have dawned on some people. They might have had other priorities.
Mayor Richard Gray only recently released a lengthy public letter to a carefully coordinated media campaign outlining his take on the system, his support for it in many respects, and his list of issues that he believes now need to be addressed. A full 4 years into his term as mayor of this city.
Well, there's about half of that segment to go and one more segment on 4. If you have a particular interest in this topic, then you can go to YouTube and just type in Lancaster, Pennsylvania, or Watching the Watchers or something like that, and you'll get the all 4 segments. Very, very interesting, and you're seeing citizens rise up and think about the implications of this. And, of course, deep down, they never talk about where the money comes from to pay for this. The city of Lancaster has spent some of the money, or that community has financed these cameras, but I'm sure there's some federal dollars involved in this, too, through Homeland Security Funds, which has funded so many of these camera systems across the United States. It's interesting, though. I mean, who else should be watching us, and under what circumstance? And what was odd about this particular one is you have a situation where it's a private entity that's doing it. They're not even public employees, which is not that unusual in the United States, but it's rare. I guess that would make it unusual, but. Cincinnati, for example, in Ohio, tried to have citizens come in and watch their cameras. There was an organization called CityWatch.org, and they were going to train all these people. And in a matter of months, I think the people decided they didn't want to sit around in a police station or at the CityWatch.org place and watch surveillance cameras. And that's kind of been the case a lot of places in the United States. Who's going to sit and watch these things? A lot of places just run them, and then if there's some crime that occurs in that area, they'll go back and try to recover the captured video. If not, the thing's just run, the video is destroyed after a particular period of time. Well, that's about all the time we have for tonight, and I hope you enjoyed the show. It's an interesting topic for sure. I think we're not going to be done hearing about this for quite a while, and we hope you join us again next week. Take a look at the show billing and see what we're going to be doing. And I'm sure we'll be meeting again.
We'll meet again. Don't know when. Don't know when. But I know we'll meet again some sunny day. Smiling through just like you always do, till the blue skies drive the dark clouds far away. So will you please say hello to the folks that I know, tell them I won't be long. They'll be happy to know that as you saw me go, I was singing this song. We meet again, don't know where,